Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Tuesday, November 21st, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your viewership and we appreciate you watching WVW-TV. As you know, WVW-TV has been on broadcasting on the air since 2006, and we're very happy to be able to bring you alternative viewpoints that cut through the clutter and are certainly not directed by commercial advertising, and gives you a chance to hear opinions and thoughts in the great marketplace of ideas that you're probably not going to hear in the mainstream media. So thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate your viewership. We also appreciate your support. Of course, we are not a commercial network. We don't sell commercial advertising. We rely upon the kind generosity of our viewers. And of course, as this becomes the gift-giving season, you may want to think about going to the WVW-TV Foundation, perhaps making a donation, helping out, and helping the programming continue. Excuse me. As you know, we do not charge a fee for our content. We don't have a subscription, an annual subscription, and it's not. There's no paywall. So we are here 24 hours a day, whether live broadcasting or pre-recorded material, so that you have full access to some very great thought and discussion and debates and arguments. And it all happens right here on WVW-TV. And of course, the purpose of my show, Eastman Financial Report, is when we started the concept back in, I think, February of this year, the idea was to start probing at a deeper level economic and financial news so that we take away the shock value of the headline and we start to probe a little more deeply into exactly what are we hearing and what does it mean. And that's the purpose of my program. And I'm very happy to be able to do this on WVW-TV. As you know, we also have sponsors for our network, and the sponsor for my program is a company called Swiss America Trading. And that company is based in Arizona. It's an American company. And they are purveyors of precious metals. They sell precious metals. So if you're thinking about investing in precious metals or purchasing precious metals, or expanding your holdings, or even thinking about, what do I get, a gift idea for the difficult to buy for niece or nephew or son or grandson or grandchildren, or your Uncle Mortimer. What do you get somebody like that for the holidays, for gift giving, for Christmas? And of course, precious metals make some sense. So you might want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271. And, if you do, call up, tell them Dan Eastman from Eastman Financial Report sent you, and they'll be happy to send you some free information. No obligation, no pressure, salespeople will call. But it's helpful to understand any area that you're making a purchase in, and I think that's important. You can also go to their website, and you can go to SwissAmerica.com. And you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And primarily, they offer gold and silver and platinum bullion coins, which are minted by governments around the world. And the idea is that they take gold and silver and platinum from their terrain, and they mint it into coins. And their standard size and their standard quality, the quality of the gold or silver or platinum, and the weight, the quantity. So you know when you're going to purchase precious metals that these would be legitimate size and weight and purity. So that's a benefit of purchasing bullion coins for your personal consumption. Also, right now, Swiss America is running a really great special. It's kind of important during the holiday gift-giving season, and we're approaching Black Friday, of course, and then Cyber Monday. They're offering a silver dollar, silver half dollars. These are Standing Liberty silver half dollars coins that are bullion coins minted by the U.S. government, and they're offering them for the low price of $13.50 a piece, and that includes shipping to your house or office or business. And that's a good deal, because if you know anything about buying things online, shipping's expensive. And when you can ship something heavy like precious metals with shipping included, that's a good deal. So you might want to take a look at that, really, if you're thinking about buying something for the hard to buy gift recipient. Certainly precious metals is a viable option. Well, you think about it, 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem when the wise men showed up, one of them was carrying gold as a gift for the newborn baby Jesus. And of course, that's a precious metal that was, I'm sure, very helpful to the family at the time. So, there's nothing new here about giving gold and silver for the holidays. And of course, people who receive such a nice gift, they tend to not just use it up and throw it in the garbage and it ends up in a landfill. People don't throw out precious metals. They tend to put them in their sock drawer and hope for the future. So anyway, give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271. Go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. If you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they will be happy to send you free information. And of course, you can get that special, the $13.50 special. Now, there's a limit. There's only 250 coins per person, and that offer is good until they run out of inventory, and then that's it. So you might want to think about it. If you're doing some cyber shopping this weekend, you might want to go to SwissAmerica.com and take a look. Okay, let's move into the news. And of course, this is a very slow news week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. We are 2 days away from Thanksgiving. And of course, we're eager to all celebrate and give thanks for the wonderful blessings we have in this country. And usually you'd expect to have a slow news day. But interestingly, today there's some really interesting news out there that I'm going to share. And of course, it's you don't want to be always the purveyor of doom and gloom. But when you look at the statistics coming in, it is not hard to begin to understand that the economy is facing some strong headwinds. And one of the things I wanted to talk about today, I saw in the news, is that yet another big box company has signaled their suggestion that perhaps that the do-it-yourself home repair type market is softening. And of course, let's think about that. I've talked about this in the past, that when you're a big publicly traded company, there are obligations in your public reporting and public statements. And of course, we know that the public companies, their stocks are registered under the 1933 Act, the Securities Act of 1933, which means when they sell those stocks to the public, they have to put a prospectus together and they have to tell the truth, okay? And that's really a big part of how American securities are issued to the public. And then of course, these publicly issued securities trade on stock exchanges. And of course, the Securities and Exchange Commission is the regulating body, along with the self-regulatory organization, FINRA, that run the stock exchanges. And under the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934, there are very specific rules with respect to reporting financial information. So if you're a public company and your stock trades on a stock exchange, then you have to basically be very careful about your public statements, because the downfall is if you misstate a material fact or you fail to disclose a material fact, that's a violation of federal and securities laws. And there's civil liability and there's also criminal liability. So the chief financial officer, the CFO, and the CEO, the chief executive officer, in these big public companies are personally liable for the statements they make if they were to mislead. And of course, we go back to the Enron situation and some of the other big corporate blowouts in corporate history. People got in big trouble because they failed to state the truth. Effectively, they made misstatements of a material fact, which did not, and their careers did not end well as a result of that. So the point is that current management under Sarbanes-Oxley and the securities disclosure requirements are very careful. And of course, they have accounting firms and they have law firms that advise them and say, okay, well, let's see what they're going to say publicly. And then they, we can say this, you can't say that. And they kind of work their way through it. And so my point is when a big company makes a statement, you can be pretty sure in this day and age with personal criminal liability and civil liability from the CEO and the CFO that these people are speaking carefully and that they're making statements of a material fact that are as accurate as humanly possible. So that's why when I see a big box store saying that they're seeing a softening in the do-it-yourself market, that's not a real comforting thing, because if you're a big box retailer of home improvement stuff. I'm not going to mention any company names because it's not important. But the point is, what they're telling you is that they're looking at their projections and their numbers, and they're trying to figure out their supply chain. How much inventory do we need? And, you know, what, adding new products, or what are we putting on the shelves? And what they're seeing is a softening demand for products that would be used by people to fix up their own homes. And I think, wow, that's an interesting thing, because usually in a recessionary period, people tend to hunker down, stay home, and start fixing up their house. You know, all these deferred projects we all have that are, you know, on the to-do list, that yellowing, crunchy, crispy to-do list. But what it tells you is that the company is somewhat concerned, and what they're trying to do is moderate expectations when they make statements like that. That, you know, we're facing headwinds, that the consumer is tightening up, they're slowing down. And then another big box, an electronics big box, is also reporting, and of course their statements are that they're seeing a lot of unpredictability in the market with respect to consumers. And of course, we're coming into Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and that's when everybody's supposed to, you know, spend a lot of money on Christmas gifts and holiday gifts. And what you're seeing from the retailers is there's caution, and I think that bodes well, because obviously the student loan situation has kicked in September, and people are, you know, writing big checks, and their cash flow isn't quite what they'd hope it was. So it's going to reflect and manifest itself in retail purchasing. And I think this is going to be a cautious holiday season. And, you know, we think about inflation was pretty big problem last year. It's been moderated rather substantially by a draconian reaction by the Federal Reserve and cranking up the interest rates. But at the end of the day, you know, when we look at aggregate demand in the economy, that's my big ball of the economy, all the private sector activity. When that big ball starts to shrink because of a decline in aggregate demand, and then that becomes a problem. We call that a recession. And if it shrinks too far and too fast, then it's a depression. So when we start to see these indicators throughout our economic our economy, then it suggests that things are, you know, they're not quite as booming and robust as we'd like to see. Another story that parallels that I saw in the news today is existing home sales are reported out quite frequently, monthly basically. And housing sales have always been tricky. And there's some great indexes like the Case-Shiller Index, which is sort of an academic prognosticator of the health of the housing market. This is not that, but their housing data really swings rather wildly from month to month. So you always have to take housing with a little bit of a grain of salt, because housing takes time. You can go to the big box and you can buy a refrigerator or whatever, and you pay the money, you take the refrigerator home, and the deal is done. But with housing, as we all know, there's a process. There's a permitting process, and then of course you had to get your financing in place. And if you buy an existing home, well, you write an offer to purchase, the offer is accepted, and then, you know, you have to get your financing in place and all the closing stuff. And it usually takes about a month, month and a half to close on a property, an existing property. And of course, if you build a property, it could take 6 months to a year, depending on the weather and, you know, whether they run out of siding or whatever, all the issues. So housing numbers are a lot more prone to wild swings. So the interesting thing about this story is that existing home sales are reported down, and it's the lowest since 2010, which, you know, it doesn't sound like too long ago, but frankly, it's 13 years ago. It's hard to believe. And unfortunately, housing is down 4.1% month over month. So that means from last month to this month, this reporting month, housing is down 4.1%, which is a big jump, especially when you think that expectations, it was supposed to go down 1.5% and it went down 4.1%. So that's a big, big number. And then total existing sales declined to 3.8 million homes. Now, I think, wow, that's a lot of homes. But when you think about the size of the United States and our population of roughly 330 million people, give or take a few. What it tells you is there's under 4 million homes changing hands, and that's existing home sales. Now, usually that number can be much higher. You mean 7 million, 10 million, you know, you see a big number. But we're down into just under 4 million homes changing hands. So what it tells you is the housing market, due to the interest rate increases that's happened over the year, has really come to pretty much, I don't want to say a halt, because 4 million homes is still a lot of homes, but it's not what it used to be. And one of the interesting things about this story is that they break the country into four regions. And in the West, it's the lowest it's ever been. In the Northeast, it's the lowest, tied for the lowest it's ever been. And in the Midwest, interestingly, it's flat, which is sort of interesting because usually I live in the Midwest. We obviously live up in Wisconsin, and we are right in the middle of the Midwest, even though we're on the northern end of it. But at the end of the day, things take a long time to happen here when they're already happening on the coast. It's kind of slow in these year parts. And that's why it's sort of interesting to see, you know, we don't see the booms of, price explosions and the hot markets, but we certainly don't see the crashes either. So, but it's an interesting thing that we're looking at less than 4 million homes that are changing hands. And that's, that's another indicator that, you know, consumers are pretty much hunkered down at this point. Matter of fact, I saw one article that is an interesting list of indicators. I don't like to just be gloom and doom, but I think it's worthy talking about the status of the consumers right now. Because if you look at the national level of rent, you like to think about rent and mortgage payments in the 20 to 25% range. If you take 20 to 25% of your take-home pay, that should be allocated to housing. And if you get above that, what it does is housing starts to squeeze out other things. Well, you're not going to squeeze out food, because while you're living in an apartment or a house, you would perhaps like to have a meal from time to time. But what it does do is it takes away from discretionary spending, which can be entertainment, it could be restaurants, dining out, that sort of thing, travel. And when housing costs become burdensome at 30%, caterus paribus, you're going to find that people have less money to spend elsewhere. And then it becomes from the great economic platform, and I guess we're all participants in the economy, it becomes a fight for those dollars. So if rent is going up, or mortgage payments are going up, and student loans kick back in, and car payments are going up, then those discretionary dollars, you know, whether they go to the big box retailer, or they go to entertainment or travel, or, you know, charity giving, all of those avenues compete for those dwindling dollars as your core costs increase. So it becomes a real problem when you see rents at 30% of income. You see mortgage rates have actually softened a little bit, but you're still looking at 7.5%. Compared to 2 years ago when they were like 2.1%, it's still a shock to the system. So we think about that. Another thing they pointed to is that the volume of people visiting food pantries in America is just off the charts. And that's a sad thing, because, you know, it's a good thing that food pantries exist, because there are times when people really need some help. And it's good to know within society that, you know, people come together, not the government, just the people, perhaps a church or an organization or a local community food pantry, but there are people who are out there helping others. The sad thing is when you see, you know, a burgeoning number of people that are using food pantries to get something to eat, that doesn't bode well for the economy. And that could be a blowback from, you know, the rents or the housing costs are so high that, you know, you have to find somewhere within your budget some relief. And of course, if you've maxed out your credit cards, where do you go? And that's why I think that, you know, at the same time you're seeing high rents and housing costs, you're also seeing food pantry participation or usership increasing. And I think that's kind of a troubling thing. And then also, when you take a look at the American economy on average, you take the average earnings of all Americans, you add them all up from from Bill Gates and, you know, Warren Buffett all the way down to somebody in high school, the average earnings have declined by 3.3% since January of 2021. Now, that's really a problem because that's like 3 years into it. Instead of having household income going up during an inflationary period, you're finding that household earnings are declining at the same time we have inflation and all these other costs pushing. And that's kind of a bad situation to be in, because again, it doesn't really show that the American consumer is in a healthy place where they're optimistic and going out and, you know, living a little. They're, unfortunately, I think people are, you know, the winds are blowing and the sails are trimmed and people are battening the hatches. So another indicator that was pointed out is that there's an increasing number of fast food places that are closing in America. You think, well, you know, fast food is kind of it was one of those highly democratic places where I bet Bill Gates and Warren Buffett do in fact stop for a fast food burger once in a while. I certainly do. And, you know, I think that's sort of one of the great homogenizers of American society is to be able to go to your favorite burger joint and get some fries and burgers. Probably not good for you, but it sure tastes good. And I guess that's all that matters. But when you see that these chains are closing, and it's not the franchisor, it's the franchisees who purchase the franchise and they operate them in your neighborhood store. When you go to a big chain type fast food place, rest assured, now there are company-owned stores, but a lot of those are small business people who buy a franchise, and they take the economic risk, and they pay the franchise fee every month, but they're the ones that are paying the rent and the labor, and, you know, it's not some big corporation somewhere. It's a mom and pop or whatever, but it's a small business owner in your community, and when you see them closing, that's not a good sign. I mean, it's just you'd rather not. You'd rather see more opening, more selection, more diversity in the food base, and that's why when you see, you know, a statistic showing that fast food places are closing, that's not so good. And then the next thing I had noticed, of course, and I apologize for all the gloom and doom today, 2 weeks or 2 days before the day we all give thanks, but it's indicative of where we stand. And I think when you look at the big corporations and the banks at financial houses announcing layoffs, those are pretty good paying jobs and pretty good industries. But again, people are trimming their sales because as revenues decline, you have to cut your expenses. Remember my formula: revenues minus expenses equals profit or earnings, income. And if your revenues are declining, you have to cut your costs or you're going to be operating in a negative. And no business can do that very long without suffering some severe consequences. So that's another indicator that things aren't really that hot. Another indicator I noticed was that the federal income tax revenues that are generated are declining. And this is troubling for a lot of reasons, because as we all know, we have an obligation and a duty to pay our taxes. And that's why we have an Internal Revenue Service, which is a part of our United States Treasury. Their job is to administer and enforce the federal income tax rules, laws. And we all pay our taxes on April 15th, but a lot of self-employed people will pay quarterly and then true up on April 15th. And so the federal government four times a year gets a big chunk of money. You know, the biggest chunk comes on April 15th, but then, you know, the other three quarters. And that is the revenue of the United States from income tax. And of course, when you look at how much federal spending is going on, and we're looking at pushing toward $2 trillion in deficit in 1 year, and you realize that the federal income tax collections aren't keeping up with the money they're spending, and you're creating this deficit, which adds to our $33 trillion total national debt, then it becomes a little bit of a concern, especially when IRS tax collection revenues are declining. And they're declining not because people are cheating on their taxes. I suppose there's always somebody somewhere who'll try that trick, and they always get caught. But what it tells you is, from the perspective, if you're unemployed, you know, there's no taxes being withheld from your paycheck. And if your business is struggling, you're operating at a loss, you're not paying in income taxes. So it tells you that the tax revenues will soften. You can see that also in states that have sales taxes, states and municipalities that have sales taxes. If you look at the sales tax numbers, you get a real sense of how the local economy is doing when the collection of sales tax declines, and to some extent gasoline taxes as well. So when you look at this, you know, people are paying less taxes, not because they're devious or clever or foolish, it's because they don't have any money. So we, you know, we chalk that up to another indicator that perhaps it's not all wine and roses at this point. And then of course we also notice that there's a provision with 401k retirement plans in many plans, not all plans, but some plans that allow people to borrow from their 401k retirement program for certain hardships. And that has to do with the cost of a house if your mortgage is behind. And it's defined in IRS statutes. If you meet the hardship condition, you can borrow money and you can avoid the penalty of taking the money out early. And unfortunately, those hardship withdrawals are increasing as people are looking to their retirement savings to make current ends meet. And that's very difficult because you borrow the money, it's hard to pay that back in. And then, of course, once you take it out, even if you've avoided the penalty, you still owe income tax on the amount you withdrew. And that becomes a downward cycle of doom as well. So, We add up all of these indicators, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news 2 days before Thanksgiving, and we do have a lot to be thankful for, but the current economic situation is rather difficult, and we pray that this situation will turn around and that the economy picks up and we'll be able to be a more prosperous nation. And only time will tell. Another thing that I wanted to talk about in the few minutes I have left, and I'm trying to go through my list here, as you can see, this is sort of what's left over from the week that I haven't been talking about. And we'll be off air tomorrow through Sunday, of course, and then we'll be back next Monday. So we'll be doing pre-recorded programming. But I wanted to get through my list. I guess this is what you do as a college professor just before Thanksgiving, is you make sure you get all the points in. Then it's the student's job to study over Thanksgiving weekend and be ready for the quiz on Tuesday, I guess. No quiz here. But anyway, the last issue I wanted to talk about is I'm watching the logistics industry, and that's the trucking industry in America. And frankly, I said, why don't you call it trucking? Well, trucking has evolved into logistics of how do you get stuff, supply chain stuff, from point A to point B. And that is basically a derivative of how do we stock the stores and how do we bring in the raw materials and how do we generate, how do we get the stuff we need to have a tangible society? And it all depends upon logistics. You have to, if you're sourcing materials in China or products in China, you have to find a source over there, a manufacturer, you have to get it on a boat, get it to the US, and then get it on a truck or a train. And then it ends up in a warehouse. And then that's that last mile concept. And that's where the trucking industry really, the rubber meets the road, as they say. And the trucking industry is a struggling place right now. You're seeing, sadly, you're seeing bankruptcies in very old trucking companies. And again, what it tells you is there's not enough revenue in that space because primarily there isn't enough consumer demand. I mean, the aggregate demand in our economy is very soft. So as such, there are fewer loads, there's fewer revenue dollars. Every load is a revenue dollar attached. And at the end of the day, it's another indicator that, the economy as we sit today is not the healthiest it could be. And we hope that, in the new year, we're going to be able to turn this thing around and really have a much stronger economy going forward. So I think that's something we hope and pray for on our Thanksgiving. Well, I'm out of time for today. Great talking with you. Have a terrific afternoon. Happy Thanksgiving, and I'll talk to you Monday. Bye.